everybody. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm Tish Oakley with Earth Monkey Energies. So pleased to be here today on Plant a Good Seed. We're going to try to plant some good seeds. My guest is Junghwa Kim, who, let me read her introduction for you, and she'll come on screen in a bit. Junghwa Kim, MFT, is an active mom and cognitive coach who helps people reach their full potential. She supports positive co-parenting in special education communities in Monterey County, California. She received a master's in counseling psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute and has studied aesthetic disciplines and meditations for 30 years. Just fantastic. So, yay! Welcome!
So great to be here with you, Tish.
Yes, we're finally here and we finally get to dig in because we've just been like, ooh, we need to talk about this. So let's go ahead and start to unpack a little bit about what we're talking about, the human connection. We're here connecting. So let's kind of start talking about that. How about it? So first, I feel like we need to define what human connection is, right? Before we start talking about that, the authenticity part. So, you know, when we talk about humans connecting, first of all, to back up a minute, I feel like human connection is what almost everyone is searching for in one way or another. People that go to school, you're going to school to connect, right? People that, you know, we think that we have to make money, to have a living. But really what we're doing is we're connecting with somebody or something, right, in order to accomplish that. So human connection seems to be a goal, but it also seems to be a way and a method.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think 100%. It's all about connection interpersonally and within ourselves. We want to be more real and we want to understand things better in each other. So anything that we can do to help each other too, that is super important, especially now during the pandemic.
100%. You know, and you said something about connecting with ourselves. You know, that's a great point because it's not just we connect with others. It's when we truly connect with ourselves is when we first can start to find our purpose and find our own inner truth.
Right. Yeah.
So, people seem to leave that part out, just like I did, just like a minute ago. But to back up a minute, to back up another step, you know, I've just met you through really the IBM TV platform, which has been a fantastic platform. And right away, you know, there was Mark Lee is like, you've got to meet Junghwa because you guys are going to connect, right? You know what I mean?
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah, and Bill and IBM TV. Yeah, it's just filled with good people who want to make the world a better place.
Yes, and help us connect. That's the whole platform, right?
Right, exactly.
With global citizenship. So let's go back to connecting with ourselves, right? And releasing that veil, releasing the walls, breaking the walls down so we can truly be ourselves with ourselves, right?
Right.
So what does that mean? What does it mean to be ourselves with ourselves, right? To find, and now I'm going to bring the authenticity into it. That's where I think we're really talking about the authenticity is when we talk about the real, true energy source, right?
Yeah. And for me, that takes some quiet. A lot of times it's through moving meditations, but just now it's super simple and important for me to just feel my feet and somatically go within so that I can be more present with you. And then once I feel my feet, I can feel my legs, I can feel my feelings in my stomach, and it goes up and down. It's that interwoven being and presence. And then I'm able to kind of feel the other person. I'm trying to be mindful of where you're coming from and where you might be. And then we use our words, like I use my words to try to ask and get more information and describe what's going on. So that kind of interplay is a wonderful game and dance that we can do with each other that gives me energy and inspiration.
Yeah, connecting with the energy. But I got to say, you know, I don't like using the word game. Mm-hmm. And it could just be my roots or my previous career.
Yeah.
You know, there's too many because I feel like a lot of times to me, when you start talking about game, you start wondering where the authenticity is.
Okay, I meant it as playful.
Yeah, okay.
So
right.
That's good to know. You know, like what we're doing now is to kind of explain some of our context. Because
exactly.
I have a different context than someone else, than you do. And that meaning that we can talk about is helpful, right? Because that expands my viewpoint, my perspective, and understanding.
Yeah, because if we're just using words at each other,
right,
but we don't understand our perspectives or even where we're coming from. Like, for example, I had a friend the other day, and there's some things going around, and she actually apologized to me. And I said, you know, there's absolutely no reason you ever have to apologize to me, because I know you're always coming from a place of care, love, and concern. You know, so anything you do, well, that we tried that. It's not good. Let's move on from there. But it's like, you know, because, again, when you really understand the other person and you're in tune and connected to the other person, I think it can definitely change the relationships. But yes, I think it's important in the beginning of any relationship to make sure that you understand what that person means when they speak, you know, or when they say something. And we don't just assume. There's too many times we use assumptions, or we apply our labels or our definitions or our perceptions. And that's not really a connection, is it?
Yeah, that's a big part of what I try to do, like not to impose my expectations on other people and to come from a place of non-judgment, which is impossible all the time. So just strive, you know, to be non-judgmental of the things that I do, the things that other people do, and come from a place that is filled with mutual respect. And given that it's difficult to do, right?
Very difficult. That, you know, a friend of mine in pre-med, and I've said this before on the show, but he did a paper early in his career about what the brain does with new stimuli. The brain automatically, and you may have seen this in your, automatically categorizes, you know, and we could call that judging, you know, because all of a sudden this person's in that bucket and this person's in that bucket when we first meet them, because the brain does that to handle all the stimuli that comes into it. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to be our conscious or our mindful, to use that popular term right now, our decision to investigate, you know, why that person, you know, what is that person and do they really belong in that bucket?
Right.
So, but
that
like
cognitive
you,
work, yeah.
Exactly. But like you said, it's just we do it automatically even if we mindful and try not to. You know, I love what you said about, you know, when you try to be 100% present, you start with your feet.
Yeah, because I am trained, you know, I don't know if it's because of schooling or culture, but to be top down. And so I tend to think too much and overanalyze stuff. So the biggest thing for me is to just be embodied. And all this work that we do nowadays, sitting in the chairs and on the computer, that reinforces overthinking stuff for me.
Yes.
So I just really try to take little breaks and be mindful even when I'm talking with you now about, can I feel my toes? Like, where is my body in space? And like, I love what you said before about how the brain automatically categorizes stuff. And I think of how powerful feelings are. We touched on this in our talks before, one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And I love how feelings synthesize what goes into our thought, as well as our experiences and our present body, and to trust that gut, that feeling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, to trust the gut, you have to really know, at least for me, where you're coming from. And I think that's for you, where physically you're in touch with your feet, because that it's just a wonderful thing. And if you don't mind it, I'll use it with some of my clients that have anxiety.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, because I usually, once we're doing our Qigong, I ground them in their feet, the 10 points on the bottom of you know, I ground them down. But for them to be able to use that as a tool real quick, you know, feel your feet, feel your toes, you know what I mean? And
yes.
and to be able to get them to come back into their body instead of all of this miscellaneous energy that can get really kind of channel somebody in a direction, like you said, with emotions. So then you've got anxiety, so you're not feeling grounded. So all of a sudden your emotions start to come in and translate. Or what was the word you used, that emotions? Was it assimilate? What was it?
Yeah, assimilate is good. Like mm-hmm. it synthesizes mm-hmm. all of our experiences, mm-hmm. you know, past and present. So that to me is a brilliant way of just a flash of how I can get attuned to what's going on and connect more deeply. Right. And I right. love how you use your Qigong to inform your practice with other people, because Qigong is all about energy. And energy to me is this interplay, like being present, you know, in our relationships.
Well, to take it, you know, not to take it home too fast, but to me, human connection is all about the energy. It's mm-hmm. your energy and my energy, really. Once you break away all of the assumptions, the categorizations, the social convention, the voids, the, you know, what you think you need, the attachments you have, all of those things that people typically, you know, think of when they think of human connection. But when you really let your energy interact with somebody else's energy and just feel it, you know what I mean? It's such a different experience. And to me, that's the true connection part that we're all longing for. But so many of us have veils and walls and definitions and attachments that don't allow, like you said, first of all, for you to feel your own energy, right? And I keep going here just to explain people, the Dantian in Chinese Kung Fu, the Dantian is your main power center. It's maybe a couple inches below your belly button, 2 to 3 inches below your belly button, depending on your size. And some, you know, one thing a student just read too was it's like an inch or two inside as well, kind of where your sacral chakra would be. But that's why I'm pointing right here is your Dantian. And that's, you know, you can breathe into your Dantian. And then when you're with another mindful person, when they are in their body and they are present, then you can feel that connection with them. Right. Mm-hmm. Just like you can, sometimes there's people that you feel like there's no connection, right? Like there's some kind of wall. It's like, okay, well, nothing to see here. Moving on.
Yeah. That's interesting too. I mean, there's that whole concept of karma, which is cause and effect. And then some people believe in past lives. Yep. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it makes sense as an analogy for me to understand things. Because like there's no connection, right? There's no karma between certain people or certain places. But there is other people in other places.
They're totally, and some of it's not explainable. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, yesterday I spent time with a friend of mine from high school who has a lot of, who is a herdsman, and he's got a bunch of cows, and he was showing cows. And there was a girl that he was training how to show cows. She's not his daughter. She's not his cousin, not his niece. This girl, for some reason, her family has horses, but for some reason, she loves cows. You know, and I sat there all yesterday and I asked her mom, you know, I was like, so where'd the cow thing come from? And I asked her dad, where'd the cow thing come from? And I asked her, you know, her, you know, why cows, you know, and she just kind of looked off and, you know, she's in touch with the energy and with, you know, her desire, the connection that she has with the cows, but she doesn't know why or where it came from. And to me, past lives make the most sense to explain that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I have no idea if it's true or not, but it just makes sense as a theory, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I agree with you. And there's like this, one of my teachers, he talks about how even family relationships can be talked about in terms of kalpas, which is 10,000 years. It's like, you know, it's an eon, say, and that, even within our family, we may not have the closest relationships to certain blood relatives, while we have other really close connections to people who are unrelated to us,
totally.
Even blood-wise. So when I thought about family relationships in terms of karma, that was really interesting too, because then that helped me put into perspective my relationships with family members in ways, like it helped me understand Oh, okay. Maybe that's why this particular relationship with my mom or my brother or my father has been this way in a non-traditional sense, where I didn't feel like my mother was more of a maternal figure than a paternal figure, or maybe even a sister, and that it wasn't personal to anything that we had done to each other in this life. It was more about putting it in perspective in a karmic, framework. So that helped me release a lot of angst I had about my relationships with my family members, because there's that, judgment in our culture about, if I don't have a perfect relationship with my family members, then something must be wrong with me, or, that kind of unfair judgment is common. And there's so much dysfunction in families.
Because I think there's so much unknown and there's karma and people don't respect it. People don't respect each other. People, they carry down, there's the conscious experience that you receive from your family experience, and then there's the subconscious experience that you receive from your family, right? And whether we like it or not, those are connections that are forced upon us, right?
We didn't have choice.
And I mean, like you said, it could be all kinds of karmic, it could be all kinds of things going on there, but those are the relationships, the connections we have in our life that honestly we didn't seek out or choose. Whereas if you're like me, the rest of my life, if you're in my life, then I've chosen you to be in my life because there's something about either I'm giving you something that you need, you're giving me something I need, or we just, and I'm going to go to this point now. When you get a true connection with another person, I think that can release that divine spark where we all realize that, this really is just a physical vessel and this is a physical experience. But we're really, I totally believe what Chrissy said a couple weeks ago that we're spirits having this physical experience. We're souls having this physical experience. And it's difficult for a lot of people because you got to make your way through your body and have that relationship with your body, right? Like we talked about briefly, Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, Pilates, meditation, all of those give you that relationship with your body, right? And can help you find that connection, right? And so once you find it within yourself and you're connected, then yes, then you can find other like people. Else you're just out there whacking a mole. Oh, that person seems cool. Let's see what they're about. No, versus you walk into a room and there's two people that immediately you're like, bam, bam. What's up with them? That's who I'm talking to by the end of the night. You know what I mean? And not letting the superficial, maybe they're not in the coolest clothes, or they're not driving the hottest car. Who cares? I mean, honestly, who cares when it comes to energy?
It puts it into perspective, because I love what you said about we're souls having a physical experience. And when I think about the opportunities that my relationships with my family of origin or other people whom I've had learning challenges with, that is a blessing. And I kind of love the analogy of how karma in past lives has helped me, has provided me with opportunities in this life to work out unresolved issues so that I can work on them and not carry them into the next lives potentially. I'm always trying to better and cleanse myself. So that perspective has helped me a lot, especially with challenges, right?
100%. The fact that these folks, I picked them, they picked me, something happened to put us in, depending on what your belief is. And they're actually gifts because they help you become who you are through the challenges. That's such a hard thing sometimes to embrace. It's not until you get older that you realize you really can't run from, excuse the language, but you can't run from the bullshit. You know, it's
Because
always going to come back to you.
exactly.
Because it's your bullshit.
We create it.
We're the ones toting it around, so it's up to us to put it down. And it's through human connection, I believe, that helps us to put it down.
Oh, yeah, because otherwise, how would we know unless we had that mirror from other people?
Yes. As well as, I think, the encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, and positivity. Like, when I was in my previous career, a lot of people thought I was crazy. You know, like, they were like, you're doing Reiki, what? Tai Chi, woo-hoo. You know, and I'm like, we can start there. You know, but at the same time, it's like the energy, the connection wasn't there. You know what I mean? And so then when you do find the folks that are open to your type of energy and what you're here to offer, seed you're here to plant, right?
Yeah.
Then that sparks up and it helps you. And I'm going to call them battles because sometimes they feel like battles. And then those beautiful souls, like-minded souls, help you find, I want to say, that strength, that spark, so then you can fight the fight. Exactly. You know, and so many of them, just like you said, so many folks have gone through similar issues, not the same, but similar issues. So we think we're on an island. We think we're all out here by ourselves, and we're not.
No, absolutely. And that's so helpful, right?
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And what you said about it not being personal. Right.
I love that too. Yeah.
To think that no matter what's going on, you know, it's really not personal to you. You're taking it personally. Mm-hmm. But even if somebody's like attacking you and it seems like it's personal, just like you said, it's not, because it's really something else that's going on in their life.
Yeah. And that's why I think the disciplines that we have in common around Tai Chi or Qigong, like those philosophies are grounded in letting things go, right? Letting things go.
And yes.
Yeah. And that kind of helps me with relationships, because if someone is putting something on me that doesn't feel right,
yeah,
I can just, give them the respect. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And then let mm-hmm. it go. Mm-hmm. And they may not like that approach.
Because you didn't play their game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You didn't take your little token, put it on the board, roll the dice, play by their rules.
Yeah, because that's their form of manipulation. They want to control me or get me to do something usually.
Yep.
And if I don't play by their rules, then they get upset. And that's not my problem. My problem is being accountable to myself and my integrity. So,
100%. I just get excited. But that's so true. And, you know, a lot of folks, it would help a lot of folks, you know, to be comfortable with themselves and love themselves and actually allow themselves to grow into who it is they're here to be. Right.
And you and I share that value. I'm not sure that it's mm-hmm. totally common, right? Because
that's right.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing for me, that a lot of people are more externally focused. And I think it is easier to rely on other people for self-esteem than to rely on ourselves for our own self-esteem, even and especially when I feel alone, right? So that maturity is something that's a graceful thing. It's something that I look for in other people. You know, so that quality, I don't know how common that is, but it's super important to me. It's nice to be here with you as a like-minded person.
100%. I really appreciate you coming on board. But yeah, I think we're, at least in this country, I don't know because I haven't spent a lot of time in other countries, but I know in this country, I feel like we always work from the outside in.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people get stuck on the outside because, I mean, I think part of it is something, first of all, I think that, you know, just to look at the generations, I think that especially back in, well, superficial people have been here for thousands of years in all countries. Let's just face the fact there.
Yeah.
But second of all, I think that, you know, we especially had this thing, again, I can't speak for other countries, but I do know here, where it was all about how things looked. You know, we had the Peyton Place, we had, you know, there's been a bunch of movies even about how, you know, this is the robot look, but that's not what goes on behind the, you know, behind anything. So we've all known it, that we're not dealing in reality, but we keep, but for some reason, this facade continues, you know. And I know my mom used to talk about my grandparents, especially my grandmother, because, like, for example, to visit my grandmother, you had to wear, you had to get dressed up. You had to have a story, a funny story. Couldn't be in, you know, deep story. Couldn't be too personal. Just something funny. You had to have a story. You had to look nice. And not just look nice, but, honey, you had to wear a full slip. If you wore a dress, you couldn't wear a half slip. And your hose had to match. But my point is, so my grandmother, which I love her dearly, you know, she had this whole, it was all about the outside. And then I had another grandmother that it wasn't about the outside at all. It was like, come here, honey. You know, she loved you for who you are. She made you your favorite foot. You know, she was there for you.
Wonderful.
You know,
yeah.
So it was the two, you know, I felt like I was dealing with the two different, you know, even though the grandmother with love, she still, I remember one time she took me shopping. And I guess she didn't think I had any clothes because she was like, oh, you look so nice in that, you know, because she picked out some things for me to wear. And then, aww, like, for years after that, she was like, that purple suit you had was just so. So I think we're trained in it, is where I'm going with this, mm-hmm, is I think in this country we're trained, and it could be across the world. Again, I can't speak for other countries, but we're trained that if things look a certain way, it's okay.
Yeah. And it's it's a survival thing, right? Because visual, yeah. Because when we're in fear, we rely on visual cues even more than before, or auditory cues.
Okay.
And I know that for women, it's really important to look a certain way and to do certain things to fit in, because we are so bound by social cues and social mores. Like, I remember, like, with my mother, she's totally traumatized by how when she was little, they were in the war, and the Korean War, and she was maybe 5 years old, and she ran into an acquaintance, a social acquaintance,
mm-hmm,
and all of a sudden, they have been walking for days in,
wow,
in the country over mountains to get from one side of Korea to the other, wow, by foot. And so their feet were bleeding and everything. And they saw this person whom they knew, and my grandmother forced my mother to put on her shoes instead of these crappy sandals, so that they wouldn't look poor, right, or out of place. And that kind of social pressure can be traumatic, or, you know, have repercussions.
It prevents people from being who they are.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I've talked about, have we talked about the story of the monkeys and the bananas?
No, tell me.
It's my favorite story. One of my favorite stories. So there were these, you know, behavioral scientists, and they had, I think it was 8 chimpanzees. Put them in a room, closed them up in a room with a ladder. Bananas on the top of the ladder. We know that chimpanzees like bananas. They wanted the bananas. But they put electrodes on the ladder. So every time the chimpanzees would go to get the bananas, they'd get shocked, yeah, right? Okay, so eventually they had a room full of chimpanzees. They weren't even touching the ladder.
Yeah.
One by one, they took the chimpanzees out, replaced them with one that had never touched the ladder, never been electrocuted. Do you know what eventually happened? They had a room full of chimpanzees that had never touched the ladder, never tried to get the bananas, because the other chimpanzees, when they would go to try to touch the ladder, the other chimpanzees, no, don't do that. Don't touch the ladder. You're going to get shocked.
Right, right.
You know, so they trained each other not to touch the ladder for fear that you're going to be hurt.
Right, right.
But eventually the electricity was turned off the ladder. They could have gone up and gotten the bananas, and they didn't even try.
Yeah, exactly. It's that inner trauma. And I feel like there's a lot of things in our daily lives that traumatize us to some degree or another that we may choose to look at or not look at, but they're cumulative over time. And some are more toxic, yeah, more important than others. So that's what I love about, you know, Tai Chi and these inner disciplines and psychology, like counseling, because, mm-hmm, if we have an interest in that and we have enough support to do that kind of difficult work, it's very rewarding because it's freeing, mm-hmm, right?
Yes, it is. And you know, in the way, it's so funny when I first get a new student because they're so used to, you know, social conventions, right? They're so used to, I gotta do it right. I gotta do it like this. I gotta do it like that. Like, I have a student, I think she's on her third class now. The second class, she came back. She had asked me what the name of the exercises we did, and she looked them up, and she came back, and she was like, they're different than the way you taught, you know, oh, my gosh, what's the right way? You know, and I'm like, whatever way feels, what feels good to you? You know, do you like what, you know, did you like what you saw? If you like what you saw, and you follow that. If you like what I did, do it the way I do it. Now, if you follow me 10 times, I may do it slightly different 10 times, whatever my energy is calling for, because I'm not in a box. And my point to my students is you're not in a box. Your body is your gift to you. Enjoy it. Play with it. If your arms want to go all the way up, take them all the way up. If your arms only want to go here, take them there. You know what I mean? It's your body, your gift, your energy. Listen. Because to me, that's one of the best gifts, I think, that when people come for Qigong or Tai Chi, is that mind-body connection. Because just like you said in the beginning, once you start to feel that mind-body connection, then you can be in your body, which releases all that stuff that's not even here.
Your students are so fortunate to have you. Yeah, exactly. We bring that into the room because of our, you know, past. Exactly. And they're so, you know, what I love about what you said is that you give your students a foundation and they can look up other teachers and other
forms. Please do.
Yeah. And that you're very accepting, because the more knowledge we have, the more, you know, the more knowledge we have, the more it can help us inform and get in touch with ourselves. The Tai Chi forms are interesting too, because there's, like, you know, a few main teachers and traditions that we draw on, and yet it's really important, just like anything, to make it your own. So that's
third, right? Totally. My third principle point, I boil, you know, there's quite a few principles to Tai Chi. I boil them down into three. First is relax. Second is posture, and that's where a lot of different things fall under posture. And third is perseverance. And included in perseverance is your Tai Chi and your Qigong is yours. You make it what it is. Different people's bodies are going to look different. Different people are going to go faster. They're going to go slower. They're going to feel different things. They've got different injuries, both physical and mental and spiritual. Oh, let's face it. Yeah. You know, so it's all, again, it's a gift for folks to unleash all that and kind of unwrap. You know, you had talked about how Tai Chi really can help us let go, but Tai Chi can also help us find that center and work from the center.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. You know. It's like both at the same time. And I love your word, perseverance. It's like, could you explain that more? I want to hear more about that.
100. Oh, I can talk about this. You're going to have to cut me off. No, so perseverance, right? Your Tai Chi is your Tai Chi, meaning you put into it what you get out of it. If you just come to class, that's great. That's wonderful. But if you don't embrace the principles, you don't think about your posture, you don't listen to your body. All you do is listen to me, but you don't listen to how your foot feels when you find those 10 points on the bottom and root down into the earth. You don't feel how that knee feels when we roll our foot out and then twist our other. You don't feel that power, you know. It's all up to the individual. So your Tai Chi is your Tai Chi. And as well as all of our bodies are different, right? Mm-hmm. You can take 50 people that have been doing Tai Chi for 30 years and it's going to look slightly different. Mm-hmm. Yes, we should be turning to the same side. Yes, you know, now's time to grasp Sparrow's tail. Yes, now is single whip. But how is it going to look? Sometimes my single whips are all like that. Sometimes they're just clean out, mm-hmm. you know, because whatever my body's calling for, whatever my energy wants, mm-hmm. I'm going to give it. That's why I do it. You know, isn't that the gift for you, right?
Yes.
You give it to yourself. Anytime you get on the mat, whether you're meditating, whether you're doing yoga, Pilates, anytime you do your Tai Chi, your Qigong, you are giving yourself, your body, that time to find itself and be itself and release that spark, right?
Right, right, right.
That then lets you connect with other people in a different level, connects with yourself first. You know, sometimes first or second class people are like, You know, because it's so new to them that, you know, by the third or fourth, they're like, oh, thank God, you know, and they just let it go. Because that's part of my breathing, too, is you inhale and as you exhale, just let it all go, whatever. So let me go to my first principle. If I, like I said, I could talk about this forever.
Yeah.
But my first principle about relax. So you have to relax your body, right? Whatever you're carrying, whatever you're toting, hang it on a hook. Goes outside, right? Because you're not going to solve it while you're doing your Tai Chi. Mm-hmm. You're not going to solve it while you're doing your Tai Chi. You're here for you. You're going to give yourself this gift of time. You're going to work on your energy. So when you're done, you can go pick it up. You can go pick it up if you want to, or you can leave it there.
Yeah, you know, even better.
Totally your choice, whatever. You know, there's some people like when you're sick or when your child's sick, you can't leave it there. You're going to have to pick it back up and, you know, mm-hmm. do something about it. But there's many things that we can leave there and relax our body. And what I tell people and what I find, I don't know if you find this, but in the beginning, sometimes it is hard to relax when you're learning the form and when you're, you know, what's going on? Because some people, it's so funny. They're like, this is much more complicated than I thought. And I'm like, it's just flow. But anyway, you know, you've got to relax your body, relax your mind, relax it all. And I find that my because when I start, I don't just do like Ching Men Ching, when he starts, he just steps out, right? And there's a lot of other people that just step out. My Sifu taught me how to do heel to ball, set down the right toe, rotate it around. So now your hip socket difference versus, you know, a variety, and you're always at the same distance when you do that because your feet don't grow, right, at this point. But as soon as I do that and set that foot down, my body all, you know, and that's that muscle memory too that we're looking for, right, to tell our body it's time to relax, it's time to let it all go, it's time to just be you, be in you, and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then we know that the other principle of relax is to relax all your joints. We never want to lock anything because then that stops the chi flow, the blood flow, and all the other circulation that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then, as you know, in posture, there's so many of them. But one of the most important for me is the head pull into the sky with a string to try to lengthen and strengthen that backbone. Yeah. Right. Give it as much space as possible so it can move like a string of pearls if you want. Mm-hmm. But we want it to be like a stack of coins, nice and stable on top of each other. Right.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So one thing that I find is really helpful is that a lot of the Tai Chi teachers, like every single one that I've had, uses Qigong in the beginning when probably.
You have to. And I say you have to because you have to get, they have to know what's going on with their breath. Mm-hmm. One of my very favorite is the very basic lung and belly breath. You know what I mean? To separate out. And some people, it's really hard for them to understand that. But, you know, just like one of my teachers said, you know, once you tell your body, I'm taking over breath, I got this. You know, then it goes to work on other things, starts to relax, and you can get in your parasympathetic system, you know, quite a bit easier and quicker. But that basic, and so I definitely like to intersperse in the posting. In fact, my Tai Chi, my young family was taught with iron shirt. You know, that's how it was kind of a combination. Yeah. So when I've watched other people do Tai Chi and they don't do their posting and they don't do these other things, I'm like, what are you doing? But then, you know, you watch Ching Men Ching and he doesn't do, you know, he just flows through. So, but Qigong and you know, and then trying to define what Qigong is still sometimes, you know, people ask me what Qigong is and I might come up with 20 different things out of my, you know, depending on, you know, how would you define it?
To me, my experience of Qigong is energy and movement. Mm-hmm. So
totally.
The Taoist eight that I do when I start my Tai Chi is super helpful because it's combining the breath with the movements and the relaxation and being present. So those eight movements that I can do anywhere, especially out in nature, are very grounding, right?
Yes. So you know, if you can see the screen, that was me doing the flowing breath right in front of that waterfall on Stone Mountain. So with all the energy of the water coming down and then flowing and just letting it wash all of it away. But yes, And you know, though, sometimes with the Tai Chi, I've defined it as a combination of different Qigong moves.
Yeah, that can make sense too, right? Yeah.
You know, because you can look at each one individual, even though they're all connected, you need to connect them all when you're doing your form. Yes, you do. You know, pulling silk, right, from a cocoon. But when you look at each one individually and you connect your breath with the movement,
Yeah, because that's all energy. Yeah, we're using the form to heal whatever, stuff is stuck in the body
release.
to release it. Yeah, so that we can become more present and relaxed and
And some
responsive.
totally, and some folks that don't understand energy but have heard of acupuncture, I'm like, you know, Tai Chi is almost like internal acupuncture. You know, if I could use the, you know, for I'm going to say lay people. Now, for someone like you're like, what are you saying? Internal acupuncture is all internal, but you know, but there's no needles, there's no nothing. And once you get in touch with your energy, you can feel blockages and you can move it. And then with the motions, again, some you might want to do a little bit more forcefully, some a little bit slower, I think, to release whatever blockage you have, even though a lot of, I want to say, pundits will say it's all the same speed throughout, which is great too. But I'm going to go back to the fact that Tai Chi is a gift you give yourself and you use it however you need to use that tool that's in your toolbox.
Yeah, it's a blessing. 'Cause like I could even do it in teeny tiny places or yeah, out in bigger spaces. It's also like a mind body thing. So yeah, it's very comprehensive and holistic. The acupuncture, though, I'm kind of curious about your experience with that. 'Cause I love how you said that this is an internal thing that we can do with Tai Chi. What is your experience with acupuncture?
So I've been to a variety. I've been to three different acupuncturists, and two of them were traditional Chinese medical doctors. I don't think the third was. She may have been working on it. But it's funny, each one was different, each experience, and I went to each one, well, more than once. Let me say, you know, because I went, you know, because you go back because you're either working on something or, you know, that kind of thing. And I absolutely love it. And there's too many people in my life that are probably sick of hearing me say, "Have you tried acupuncture?" You know, anytime anybody's like, "My stomach, my head, my arm, have you tried acupuncture?" You know, because I really believe, I totally believe in the meridians. I totally believe in energy. And I totally believe that things start in your energy body and then manifest in your physical body. And if you're not in tune with your energy and don't have free flow, you know, nice, stable, free flowing energy, then you're going to have issues. Whether you know, you want to call it emotional, mental, physical, whatever, there's going to be problems if you're not minding your energy. And again, that's part of what I have, you know, so many people don't understand the importance of taking care of their energy body. They understand now, oh, I got to go to the gym and work out, or I got to walk. That's what I hear from a lot of people. Oh, I walk. Okay, well, what are you doing? What, how are you focusing on the inside of your body? What's getting you in tune with what's actually making you go? Because without energy, we're just a bat, the heart, that we can have all the pieces and parts, but without our energy, nothing works.
Yeah, see, I love walking. I love going to the gym, and that's a great motivator for people because we all want to look better and we all want to be
Back to
healthier.
looking,
The
right?
walking though is really interesting to me because like I usually bike or I walk, and that's a time for me to also meditate. And I think that's kind of why a lot of people do it. Running, biking, exercising is very meditative. The funny thing is that there was something that you said that made me ask a question because I loved what you said. And the acupuncture as a tool for getting in touch with the meridians. Oh, so you know how there's this wisdom in Eastern medicine
Yes.
that Western medicine is integrating, and
Trying to.
I found that really fascinating because my Pilates teacher, I go to physical therapy, and he does this integrative physical therapy stuff. And one of the big things is the pressure systems in our body, where we have these pressure systems that
Yes.
need to be engaged when we're doing activity, such as the pelvic floor and the diaphragm.
Yes.
Otherwise, I can get prone to injuries if they're not engaged. And so one of the ways that I can activate the pressure systems is by pressing the tongue to the roof of my mouth, like, so it's up there, it's sucking the roof of the mouth, and that engages the pelvic floor and the diaphragm. And so now, like, Western science, like physical therapy, is using things that are analogous and also common to Eastern practices in health. So that, you know, that that integration is really interesting to me.
Fabulous.
Interesting points, yeah, that are validated in Western science.
It's about time. Is it, you know, I had a student send me something last night about how they're finding energy and what the different chemicals, like when you cry tears of joy versus crying tears of sorrow, there's actually different chemicals in the tears. We're made of water, we're made of chemical, you know, all of these kind of things. And I'm like, finally, science is starting to get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're finally starting to get it that, you know, but that still doesn't connect with the fact of the energy. What does that do to your energy? So now it knows that there's a difference. Well, those of us that are in tune with energy, we've known all along that there's a difference. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, so now also, so what are we going to also do with that? You know, that's my other part that I'm curious about, what science is going to try to do with picking up, as you said, some of these Eastern ideas, some of these beliefs, the Ayurvedic, I mean, the master of medicine, the father of medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, they've known it all along. You know what I mean? But we have people that need empirical evidence and haven't believed it. I don't believe in that stuff. Well, you're living it, whether you believe it or not. So, you know, I'd like to see how we start to integrate. So now that we know, like, for example, now that we know the chemicals are, what are we going to do with that information? Does that mean now that we're going to realize that when we have emotions, what it does to our energy, as well as what our energy does to our emotions? And so are we going to start to take care of ourselves differently? You know, like, I love what you said about going to the gym and riding the bike, that you know, and you can meditate and you can reach that center. Right. When you do that. And there's a lot of folks that can, as you say, but there's also, from what I understand, that when you do harsh physical activity, that it also releases some of the stress hormones in your body.
Right. That balance.
You know, now it depends on what kind of activity. Yeah. Depends on what kind of activity you do and what state you're in when you do it. So you have the experience, you know, you can get yourself in the state that you need to be in and what you're looking for. You can find that calm, peace, presence, activate that parasympathetic system, rebuild, and move on. But there's other people that are doing that aren't. They still feel that competition. They still feel that, you know, that kind of versus that coming back inside. Well, I mean, that's how I feel some people are with the whole thing. Sometimes I do sound effects because words just don't work.
Love it. Yeah, exactly. It's more expressive. Well, there's a rigidity to stuff, and it's important, you know, with our practice to remain fluid. And also cross-training is really important, that cross-fertilization of ideas and practices. Because once we learn a form, like once you learn a form, then you want to integrate it. And take it to a deeper level. So that non-dualism is really helpful, right? Because that helps deepen the practice of anything.
So talk a little, what do you mean by non-dualism there?
So for me, non-dualism means a freedom, and it's not being attached to one particular idea or form. It's important to have a foundation in a discipline and then learn that and take it to the next level by going beyond it. So it's like deconstructing it, taking the essential parts of it and seeing how they can be in relationship and connected to other practices and things. That's, you know, for me, that means like elevating my knowledge so that I can learn from other people in other forms. And then you remain more flexible.
100%.
Yeah.
And to bring it on back home, because we're about 151 at this point.
Oh,
when you remain open, when you find your core, It was like 112, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness. But to take it on home, once you connect within and you find that source inside, then that's when you connect with other people. That's what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
You know, when you do your form and you find that space, and then you got to have the foundation, like you said. And that to me is connecting to yourself and to your truth, into what you're doing. Once you have that firm foundation, that's then you can go connect with others and learn from others, maybe help them learn something, and everybody can grow and flourish. I mean, for heaven's sakes, that's what this whole show is about. Plant a good seed. It's all about planting a good seed for other people, you know, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
For heaven's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. And we need people like you who can be good models, right? It's almost like parenting, where you need a parent to show us what direction. And then,
that's right.
You know, if you're on your own, you can learn it eventually, but it's a little bit harder. To have good models like you to carry that legacy forward is such a blessing. So thank you for doing this show.
Thank you, because I know you're carrying every day. You've got so much. I think your introduction really only scratched the surface about what you do and your involvement. So, you know, but I think it takes all of us. And it's back to that human connection. You know, I heard something, read something a long time ago that, you know, and I don't want to make it too woo-woo, but that there's a lot of us that, you know, feel very similar, like you and I. We're on opposite sides of the continent, you know, mm-hmm. but we connect, mm-hmm. we spark, and hopefully we're going to spark with other people. You there on the, you know, whoever watches this, but also in person, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you share your joy, you share your spark, you connect with other people. They feel that and they come into you. Same thing on this side. We're all here. You know, those of us that are, I want to say, that understand this at this point. And I think there's more and more people that are trying to find themselves, find their truth, and figure out what's going on. Now, I still think there's a lot of people out there that are attached to something outside themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's some type of their connection is almost to an attachment that's not there. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we were talking a little bit about that societal, you know, kind of expectations that really aren't essential in our lives, because the only things that we'll take with us are our bodies, right? We won't even be able to take that beyond into the next, whatever it is.
That's what I was going to say. We don't even take our bodies.
Yeah.
So, you know, we leave them here. You know, no matter what religion you believe in, you don't take your body beyond a certain point.
No, yeah.
It's just what happens. You know, so it's really an inside job, and it's what we do in connecting with people. But I want to go back to, you know, the lenses and the expectations and the attachments people have about human connections and what they think other people are there for. Right?
Right, yeah.
Like,
well,
you know, I don't want to.
I was thinking it was triggering like some stuff about transactional relationships, which are evident in our politics right now with the administration and power politics, right? That's not in reinforcing positive assets.
Connections. It's not.
Exactly. It's more about the external and looking good and how much I can control my situation, which is not possible. And so there's a lot of insecurity wrapped up in that. So
fear.
Yeah.
Love or fear? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, exactly. And the only person that can truly benefit from our love is ourselves. Once we love ourselves fully, then we can love each other better. But it has to start from there. And we have to learn from other people how to love ourselves more.
Well, you know, truly, we're all part of each other.
Yeah.
you know, there's too many people, I think, walking around saying namaste without realizing that what I'm really saying is I honor the place in you in which the place in me dwells, because we're not just really connected, we're all part of each other.
Right.
You know, and that's where once you do, you know, first you find that connection to yourself, right? You drop away all the social conventions and all the crap that people are saying and things that you've give the walls that you have given yourself, because let's face it,
right,
we do that to ourselves, just like we said in the beginning. So once you release those, you find yourself, you find your core, then you can find the connection with other people. But that's when then you realize that, wait, we're all together anyway. You know, we just you and I have been able to drop the veil. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of, this image comes up for me, which is that I'm in water. I'm in water and I'm swimming with other people all the time. And like, we're born in water in a sack in the placenta.
Yes.
Then we come out and somebody snips the umbilical cord and we think that we're separate. And that individuation process is really important developmentally. And then I think it's also important to really come back to the point that we realize we are connected, we are one, that we are interdependent, and we're constantly helping each other grow and co-originate. So yeah, that
co-originate, I love that.
That principle of Pratitya Samutpada, the codependent co-origination, where we're constantly reinforcing the fact that we are connected, we are one, and we're dependent on each other, is vital.
Mm-hmm. I used to, when I was 18, I thought, oh, I want to leave everybody. I'm going to, you know, live, people suck, you know, all this kind of business. And, you know, here I am, I'll almost say how old I am, almost, you know, 30 years later, or more than 30 years later. And I realized that that was just out of pain.
That's wonderful that you realized that.
I hope other people realize it too, because I know a lot of people say, I don't like people. And it's like, okay, that's not quite that. No, you don't like the pain that you felt from people because of the perspective, the expectations, or the attachments that you've put, plus the people that you've surrounded yourself with.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just wish, you know, people would just relax about the whole thing. I mean, honestly, you know, about the whole social convention thing and about what's right, what's wrong, what needs to be. Like, for example, I don't know if I'd call it a date, but I last summer, and he just kept talking about the money that his family has. And I'm like, stop. You know? That's not, you're not reading me. Okay, so this isn't working. You know what I mean? That's, we're not on the same page, because if that's what you think I'm interested in. Now, money is currency. I got it. You know, and in our society, you have to have it to live. We've had that conversation before about monetizing certain things. You know, you have to, you've got bills. You know, very few of us are independently financially wealthy. But so, but, you know, you have to understand that, and you, and at some point, you know, it's what you give for what you get, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for people that think it's all about money, and then there's other people, like when you look at, to be real, on their Facebook profile, it's all about what they own. You know, and it's like,
right.
You know, where are you? You know,
right.
Where are you in this? What's really important to you? The new shoes? You know, those are cute shoes. I love them. You know, but what do you think about, I don't know, about past lives? What do you think about, you know, I don't know, about Christmas? What do you think about whatever, you know, versus talking about what people have or any of the other business that people do? So I think too often, once again, we put ourselves, you know, when we're brought up first 10, 20 years, maybe even till we're 30, it is a whole lot of that social, that peer pressure, the parent, like you said, people follow example. I've said this before about the put your finger. Have I told you the story about put your finger on your chin?
No.
This is another one that's so, and this is actually a Facebook thing. It's so funny to me, but it's so real. So it was this mom and her son. Her son was, I don't know, 18, 19, 20. You know, he was mostly grown. So he should have had all that cognitive ability at that point. And she was like, okay, now put your fingers together and put it on your chin.
Uh-huh.
And he was standing right beside her.
Uh-huh.
Put it on your chin. put it on your chin.
I love it.
That's society in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Or the herd or whatever. You know, the herd follows the lead animal or whatever. Put it on your chin. Okay, putting it on my chin. You know, and so examples are so important. And then when you look at, I want to say, you know, like you brought up politics and whatnot. When you look at the people that are supposed to be the, I hate to say top of society, because so many times I think they're at the bottom of society, right? But not all. But, you know, when you look at those type folks, you're like, other people are trying to emulate them. Like, I remember when Trump came out in the 80s or whatever, and he had all these fast cars, and he did some kind of little thing, how to be a millionaire or something. And I remember almost getting sick then, because it was like, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm going to send you $100 and you're going to make me a millionaire? No, that's not how this, you know, it's just stuff. But it might have worked for some people. You know, I don't know. But anyway, my point is that it's so vital. And I think our leaders have forgotten how important and how we do, whether we want to admit it or not, how we follow the example that's set. Right.
Right.
And so when people go after any type of political leadership and they don't have the integrity that's necessary, it's really kind of a, to me, it's kind of, then my fear gets large. my love goes down, my fear goes up. What was it, you know, the ethical barometer, where are we at here, people? But yeah, example's huge. And it's interesting something you said too about visual cues and how we, you know, when we're in fear, then we really follow the visual cues.
Yeah. Well, so this is interesting to me because it's all about looking good, right? It's back to kind of that insecurity and the lack of parenting, lack of leadership, lack of role modeling. And when you said, you know, authenticity, just be natural, basically. As you do in Tai Chi and you reinforce for your students. I love how you say you be you, boo, because like that's really, that takes maturity.
That's my thing now, you be you, boo.
Yeah, I love that, right? Because at some point we have to be okay with ourselves to be comfortably enough to be ourselves with other people, not just when we're alone.
I am so sick of the lies. And I am so sick of, I'm going to say the word again, the bullshit that people feed themselves. Mm-hmm. And then people try to come into a relationship not knowing who they are or what they're doing. I'm just really tired of it. And I think that that's part of why so many people are unhappy. Like, mm-hmm. For example, you know, there's so many people looking for external validation, just like we've talked about.
Right.
You know, there's so many people on dating apps that are looking for, you know, do you know what you're looking for? Well, what you're looking for, are you going to find it in the dating app? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What in the world? And then there's people that are married on date, you know, all of this stuff going on. And, you know, in my mind, a big part of it is really that people are looking for connection. But once again, they don't really understand that.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend who's really into dating apps and it's a full-time job for her. She works. And I went to a conference with her and I was astounded by, we're like spending several days together, how much energy and time it took to scroll through everything. Yeah, exactly. Texting constantly and swiping. And I was like, wow, that takes a lot of investment. And yes. It's because she was desperately lonely. Her husband had passed away. And then when she wanted me to meet her current boyfriend, who is really typical of that particular
desperation
type. Well, so he's into dating several people at the same time. And I think this is really common where she had basically... she's been in a long-term relationship with someone who's not committed. And because she's so lonely, she's desperately looking at, you know, opportunities online and gaining skills, you know, dating skills and learning more about herself at the same time and having, you know, some self-esteem benefits from it. But I look at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm in such a different place because
Yeah.
I think that's helpful, and everybody has their own thing. I'm not judging. I
Sure,
just,
sure, sure.
it's interesting to me how what's important to me is to spend time with myself, getting to know myself better, so that at some point I can be more available if I want to invest into a relationship. You know, that is a relationship where, like, I am completely myself. I would be completely secure,
Exactly.
and can trust this other person. We have the same values.
And not let your desire or your attachment for their approval or validation determine what you say or do. Right?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I to be personal, I mean, there's been plenty of times that I'm like, you know, I want to say something, but I'm like, they may not like that. And I'm like, and now I'm at the point in my life, hey, this is how I feel. This is my authentic truth. And this is how I'm rolling. And if, you know, it's not gonna, you know what I mean? And so I
That's
feel
so
like
great.
there's too many people that need to reach down deep to figure out what's really going on. 'Cause like you said, the desperate loneliness. Now, you know, she was so attached to having somebody else in her life, like so many people are. And I gotta tell you, I'm so angry at our media for portraying that, you know, the couple is the ultimate, you know what I mean? Because for some of us, that's not our authentic human connection where we're meant to be, either right now or in the future, right?
Well, and we have to be okay with ourselves and centered first
Gosh.
before we enter a relationship that's healthy and loving. You know, if
Yeah.
we don't have that foundation, then forget it. So that externalizing, it can be very damaging.
Totally. And another thing that I'm learning too, you know, I just realized we went totally off script, but I think we're good. you know, so let's talk about, so let me go back to your friend and the desperate loneliness. Friends, you know, and that's where you have to ask yourself what kind of connection am I really looking for? You know, if I'm really looking for authentic human connection, it doesn't have to be in the opposite sex or the same, you know, or in a lover. Let me put it that way, because people do whatever people do. You do you, boo. No. you know, so they forget how valuable, like you said, the relationship and the connection with themselves it is, and the connection with other people that may be the friends that they really, that loneliness is they're looking for someone that they can be themselves with. They're looking for someone that they can also give that space for them to be themselves.
Yes, thank you.
You know, because it's all about the give. You know, some relationships are structured different ways, right? But when it, to me, it's a true human connection. You know, it's that give and receive of the truth, of the energy, you know, regardless of what you're saying or doing. You know, it's that we feel that connection. And we know that we're coming from a place of authenticity, you know. And even if we disagree or don't really get it, we respect the other person enough to try to understand, but also then just let them have that space,
Oh,
right?
yeah. That's so deep what you're saying, because to me, allowing myself to be with someone else in full acceptance and love of that person,
Yes.
to really truly be intimate and honest, is so special and vital. And that intimacy, we had been talking about this and how important it is before. Sometimes I feel like there's confusion in our society around that, right? Because, like, people think that certain things are more important than the intimacy, when really it's all about intimacy, about being truly connected, right? And
That's
present.
exactly right. And that's in all kinds of relationships. Like yesterday, I'm glad they didn't notice me staring, but again, at this cow show, you know, it's all these families is what it was. It's all these, you know, the parents teaching the kids how to do it with the cows. And at one point we were sitting around waiting for their class to go on or whatever. And this girl, she's like 17 or 18, she sits in her daddy's lap. And they just sit there and they're talking and it's like that's true intimacy, right? It doesn't have to be with a lover. whoever that you share that connection with and that closeness with, mm-hmm. and just the acceptance and just everything. It was just a beauty, and you could just feel the love. It's just beautiful. So that to me is true intimacy. She was totally herself, and she'd even brought him some problems. You know what I mean? And he was totally cool, you know, rolling with it. And he told her some things she had, but it was the give and the take, and they were there, I want to say, resting in each other's soul and spirit. And it was just beautiful. And, you know, I think ultimately, like you said, we want somebody that not only can we be real with, but vulnerable with.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Brené Brown.
Oh my gosh.
I think the science around that is clear. The funny thing is that trust takes time. So it takes time and experience to build intimacy and trust. And you know, it's helpful to watch things over time and to take things at face value the first time it appears. Cause, one thing that I found that is really interesting is all the emotions that are involved with politics and how personal it is. Like, if someone doesn't believe in what I'm thinking, that's fine. I totally respect it. And I want to hear what they're thinking. I'm not.
And why?
Yeah, and why? And I'm not going to say, you know, you can't think that way. Whereas, like, I think some people feel like if I don't feel the way that they're feeling and I don't think the way they're thinking, that that is somehow a betrayal of their principles.
Right.
And it's this enmeshed quality that is really interesting, where there's no distinction between where I end and the other person ends and how my actions affect someone else's actions. It's all kind of combined and a little bit, well, it is really scary, you know, for that particular person because they don't have control. and it has
totally.
To be their way or the highway. So that level of, I don't know, that level of, what would you call it? Independence is not there.
The level of self-awareness, it seems like.
That's true too.
Because when you're self-aware, you realize that, you know, it's so crazy, but you realize that the other person is a different person and you are your own person and you can accept or not, or however you want to work with whatever it is that they're trying to put on you or whatever they're trying to control or fear or whatever.
Right.
I think it can be very scary until somebody realizes that. Again, you do you, I do me. We come together if we can, but if not, if you're not going to respect me enough to respect my space, respect my feelings, respect my time, then, you know, on one hand, I feel for you. I really do. And you probably need, you know, somebody to help you through what you're going through. But the way you're going about it is not the way, you know what I mean?
I do, and I love that. Because when someone shows you that for the first time, I try to take that seriously. Whereas I think women are taught to dismiss it and to ignore it. And men basically, like in my experience, they just ignore it and want to like not address it because it's not big enough. My concern is that sometimes when someone is showing themselves to me that they're not capable of trust and they don't earn my trust, that it's important for me to not accept that and to not seek that out. So it, you know, it's one of those things that is like a discretion thing, because people who are transactional or in a situation where they need that person's support in some issue will use them. And then I kind of wonder in the back of my mind, like, how will that work out in the end? Because
I can tell you. No.
That kind of behavior is not a one-off, right? That's something they've shown you who they are and what they're capable of doing. And they're very likely to do that again. There's no way that I can change them on that. So I need to respect that they're showing me who they are.
That's right.
to listen to that, not just put it under the rug and say, okay, well, it's okay this time, but I need you in this other area, so I'll use you for this particular thing. And then say, oh my gosh, I'll be shocked again when this happens again in the future. You know, that,
oh, how could this happen? How could you do this to me?
Yeah, disingenuousness is harmful.
Zebras don't change their stripes.
Exactly.
I hate to say it. And yeah. It's not too, you know, and we're not saying that we need to categorize people quickly or assign labels, good or bad, or any of that kind of stuff. What we're talking about is allowing people into our intimate lives.
Right. Yeah, and the boundaries.
And what work, yep. And boundaries are vital. I got to tell you that I've, again, very personal, but I've had a lot of relationships in my life where I was afraid to put up boundaries. You know, I come from an abusive background, so I don't want to put up boundaries because you're not going to like me then. You know, so I'd let people just walk all over me. And I've learned that boundaries are vital for yourself and for other people.
Yes, yeah, that is something that we've had to learn. We talked about this. And how it's not intuitive, you know, for our backgrounds, because we were trained the other way.
That's right.
To give away ourselves in order to survive.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're here for others. You're a helpmeet.
Yeah, exactly. And to discern, like, who is the person that we want to invite into our lives,
yes,
who is out for our benefit, not their benefit, right? So they're not...
Or... For me, it's who makes that spark come up.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, so let's go real quick, because I really want to touch what you said too, but let's go back to if you can define what a transactional relationship is.
Yeah, exactly. That's, to me, it's really simple. It's where someone wants something from me, and mm-hmm. that's all they want. They're not interested in, you know, my welfare, necessarily.
Right.
It's all about their welfare. It's more about you two people, right? Instead of being engaged in an authentic relationship about learning more about ourselves and each other. So it's very, yeah, transactional. It's superficial.
So this is my hole. This is what I want. This is what I'm attached to. I got a hole. Now you're going to fit in it and you're going to give me what I want.
Right.
Basically what we're saying.
Yeah.
And instead of letting your energy tell you who you're truly connected to and who truly makes your soul shine and who you can help, that you know you make a difference in their life, instead of finding that connection, instead I'm going to identify a hole and a void and get somebody that looks the part or maybe says a few things that are going to fill that hole, instead of taking the time. Like you said, trust takes time. Relationships, now I know you felt this before, sometimes when you meet somebody, bam, you know there's a connection. But like you said, that trust, even though there's a connection, we don't know what that person's been through. We don't know what's going on with them, right? And while we still, after a few minutes, can kind of pick up on all that, but still over time we can see how they act, because there's a lot of people with a lot of beautiful energy that maybe don't fulfill their commitments because they're in a spot or something. You know, something's going on with them. And so, you know, they're on their path, but it's still not quite, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's why we have to have these boundaries and circles of relationships and acquaintanceships. And we can move people around based on our interactions with them, right? So we learn more about each other over time, and that takes a while, especially if it's meaningful.
Totally. And there's some lessons people are here to teach us that we're not ready to learn yet. So, you know, our relationship does a little dance. And then at some point in the future, maybe now the lesson comes out, or now whatever that, you know, because I do believe that people, you know, that old saying of people come in your life, you know, for a day, or some a week, some a month, some a season, some, you know, for longer than that. You know, some people you only... Mm-hmm. I truly believe when you connect with somebody, you're always connected to them, but you may not have that either day to day, or you may not talk to them as much because, like you said, things may be shifting around in your life and there may be something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there's a lot of people that feel that, once again, there's those old definitions of friendships, which mean we got to be on the phone for an hour a day to talk, you know, or if we don't see each other every weekend or every other weekend, you know, then we're not friends. You know, it's like
preconceived ideas about friendship.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. But once again, it's the definition and the boxes that people were given growing up and that the media society gives us. And so without questioning, wait, does that really feel right? Does that make sense? Why do I feel this? You know what I mean? People need to find themselves.
Yes, exactly. I love how you plan to see it about that. That is really important.
Yeah, I think it's vital. And I think that the more that people actually take away all the veils, take away all the crap, yeah, the better our entire society, our society will be able to, not to put in video game terms, because my son, as you know, is a video gamer, but we'll be able to level up. Yeah. You know, our whole society will level up once we stop all of the games, all of the boxes, all of the fear, all of the preconceived. Now, for those of us that have teenagers, it's a little bit easier because, like, especially my teenager, every day, Mom, that's just another social convention. That's a blah, 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 blah. So, you know, I'm very grateful to my Generation Zer for keeping me on my toes, both with what's coming out of my mouth, because he's like, did you hear what you just said, Mom? You just, I'm like, stop, you know, let me just talk. But, you know, all of these different things to help have a better, he doesn't realize it, but what he's doing is he's helping me have better human connections.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know? Teenagers are the best teachers. All children, but teenagers will, like, you know, question conventions and boundaries and things. So
yeah, and the fear, it's almost like the fear hasn't been ingrained yet.
Right. Well, they trust you. He's trusting you. So that's really beautiful that you have that relationship with your son.
Well, he knows that this is how, I mean, this is how he's raised. And what I really want is the truth. You know, and that's how my house rolls, is I want the truth. I don't want junk. I want truth, and we'll work from there. So, but sometimes I'm like, not that much truth. let's lay off that truth for a minute. Just let's go back into the world of 1950. Can you just tell me I look pretty or something? I don't know. Yeah, but, yeah. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Well, yeah,
but,
that's cool.
But so let's talk about, we called it, you know, just to come back to the topic even, we talked about authentic human connection in the land of the free.
Oh, right. Yeah, and some of that was related to gender stuff too, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, because I was watching, I think, a program where there's certain things that are okay to feel for men and certain things that you have to hide as men. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that is a misogyny that affects everyone.
Yes.
And we've seen the consequences of some of that in the media.
Totally.
I love what you say, you know, you just have to be you, Pooh, because that, and learning how to do that, you know, will free us and open up our relationships to healthy interactions.
Yep. And becoming who we're meant to be.
Yeah.
That's really the land of the free. You know, at first when we talked about it, I kind of thought, you know, we talked about the different, you know, genders, different sexuality, different things like that. But I also thought about it just in our country, right? In America, we're not really free here, you know, because we have all these social conventions. We have all these limits, all these borders that we've created ourselves. But then when I thought about it more, I was like, wait a minute, no. Authentic human connection can only happen in the land of the free when you are free within yourself to be who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And even when there are lots of social conventions, like in Asia, it's a homogeneous culture. And so you have to, homogeneous, you have to, you have to do things that are just for protocol so that people in a small area can get along and have the freedom within to be myself, to be honest and true to who I am. That freedom is something that translates into the land of the free too, you know, because we all have our own social restrictions.
Yes, we do.
And mm-hmm. so it's like anything, like there's always going to be limits, and how do we work with those limits and transcend the limits? That takes maturity and time.
Limits coming from a Buddhist.
Exactly.
Tell.
I know we talk about non-dualism, and that's because there are limits. There is dualism, right?
Yes.
So that dialectic is super important.
Yeah, even Anil talked about the non-dualism.
Yeah.
But, our land in reality is there are physical limitations. I hate to say it, but there's mental limitations as you go through your stages of understanding and abilities.
Always.
And so until you're at this stage, you're limited. You know what I mean? And it just keeps happening, but there's so many different levels to keep transcending. It's almost like each understanding opens up another understanding, and then you're like, oh my God, I don't understand anything.
Yeah, beginner's mind. And it's important that we realize we have limitations because we're human, we're not gods.
And it's okay. I mean, as long as we come at it, and this is again, no matter what, as long as you come at it with authenticity and love, it's okay. Let's move on. It's not personal. You're not trying to hurt anybody. It's okay. You can mess up. You can whatever. Let's move on. As long as we learn from it, like we said before, too.
Yeah, I loved what Alice Walker said. Her heart breaks are to make our heart more open. So it's constantly about making our hearts more open and having the discernment to know when to open and what to open to.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that was really beautiful about life.
Yeah, our hearts have to break. And that's just beautiful. It's similar to me of have you seen it, when we talk about an egg, the life comes out of the egg when it's broken from within.
Exactly.
When you break the egg, then they die. So it's you've got to break open. You've got to break whatever you call it, your chains, your eggshell, your the heart that was, hardened or frozen by whatever experiences you may have had or whatever understanding you have at this point. Let it free. I
Yes.
love that.
It's an important analogy.
I think that's probably a good note to wrap up the show on, you think? You
Yes.
want to tell us a little bit about, we didn't really talk about this, but you've got a practice that you're starting, I believe.
Oh,
You want to
right, yeah.
talk us, and if somebody wants to ask you any questions or get in touch with you in the future about anything?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm starting a new practice, and they're welcome to reach out to me and message me. It's called J.H. Kim Wellness, and the phone number is so new that I have to look it up because I don't have it memorized. Excuse me. It's eight 831-298-0782, and it's just about providing support, as you had mentioned in the beginning, some coaching during the pandemic, to meet people where they're at with
That's
parenting, with
beautiful.
special needs, with therapy, and eventually when we get back into business, I'll be doing my licensure for my practice as a therapist in the meantime. So that's kind of my goal as a single parent right now.
Which is, it's enough just to be a single parent, I gotta tell you, because I know how hard that is. And then on
Okay.
top of that, special needs. And on top of that, your education. On top of that, all your activities. On top of that, everything. You're an amazing woman.
Well, I have you as a model, so thank you for having the show and being you. I just love how open and sharing you are. So thank you, the IBM team too.
Yeah. They're fantastic. So, well, Bill, if you're listening, I think we're good to go. And I thank you, and IBM TV for everything that they've brought. So hopefully we'll see the closing spiel here soon, but we'll all